The Money Show.
Other people's money.
Tonight's other person is none other than the editor of the Financial Mail. He is the author of multiple books, the latest one being Stein Heist, which is the deep dive into the Steinhoff scandal. His name is Rob Rose. Rob Rose, welcome to The Money Show. One journalist talking to another journalist about money. I think they call that, I don't know, it's not the pot calling the kettle black. It's maybe the blind leading the blind. I'm not sure which one it is, really.
Evening, Bruce. Some could say a recipe for bankruptcy, I suppose, is a good place to start.
Yeah, those that can do and those that can't write about it, and both of us do precisely that. Talk to me about growing up. Where did Rob Rose grow up?
I kind of grew up in Joburg. I went to a very strange school, a multiracial school out in the middle of nowhere called Woodmead. It was kind of between Joburg and Pretoria. So that's what I did. It's a miracle I you know, studied further or didn't even, given how slack I was at school. But that's, I suppose,
were you terrible at school? That's why you had to become a journalist.
you know, you do what you do when you're a kid to get through, right? I mean, I went to Wits and I studied law, and I did law I did articles for 2 weeks and decided that was enough time.
What was it? Yeah. I mean, you endured law school and then you went and did your articles for 2 weeks. What was the epiphany that made you realize that this was actually not something that you wanted to do as a lawyer? You've used those skills extensively in your journalism career, but the knowledge. But what was it about the law that just didn't appeal?
You know, Bruce, I think a lot of people go into these, you have very idealistic views of life when you're young and you think you're going to go out and help people and become a lawyer, and you watch too many John Grisham movies and you think that's what I'll be like. And then I think the reality strikes you that a lot of careers are fundamentally dull, especially when you're starting out. And you're essentially, you know, what I would have been doing, I foresaw for years, was getting debt administration orders against people. It just seemed like a bit of a soul-crushing career. So I figured that journalism was more fun. I kind of enjoyed the writing. I enjoyed parts of it. So I figured that it'd be a faster route for someone who's probably essentially lazy. Get ahead.
Talk to me about that choice, that decision making, because by now in your legal career, you may very well have advanced within the corporate law. I think that's the sort of route that you would have gone. I don't think you would have gone towards the sort of criminal law. I'm wondering whether or not economically it might not have been a better decision.
Oh yeah, I mean, journalism, Bruce, as you know, is in a pretty awful space. But you know, it does have you know, upsides to it. I think that you've seen what Daily Maverick, you've seen Amar Bongani have done on the Gupta leaks, you've seen various other things, and I think you realize that it can play a positive role in our society. And I think you had a very, well, certainly I think I did, and I'm sure you did as well, a very glorified view of the media's, what it has done in the country during the India's of apartheid. So I think that's quite an attractive thing to see. I suppose I could have stuck with law, but and being an advocate, you know, I see guys, I cover cases now, and I'm quite in awe of people who stand up and make this kind of arguments in front of people, and I think that'd be quite fun to do. But, you know, those are guys who've been doing it for years and are very good, and I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have been to that standard.
Oh, no, of course you would have. Was there money at home growing up? I mean, was money a topic of discussion? Was money a comfortable topic at home?
Look, I mean, you're a white child growing up in the 80s, right? And so money, there was no money of sorts at our house. But I did grow up on a sort of a plot outside Joburg. There was not money lying around. I went on two holidays when I was growing up. But you know, that obviously is spoken from the vantage point of somebody who was a privileged white South African where the standards were different. Sure. So you might have thought I would not have, you know, I didn't grow up in a wealthy household, but it's all relative compared to, you know, millions of other people that grew up very, very privileged, and that's the reality. But I never thought of, my parents were completely profligate. They would spend money like it was going on about fashion. My mother would plot 1,000 things to do with the lottery when she won it on Sundays and never do that. So it creates quite a distorted view of your sense of money. And I think after I was studying, I had student loans for which I was essentially blacklisted that I had to pay back for years. And I think I had a very skewed idea of money. I knew nothing about it. I mean, Bruce, to put you on the spot a bit, I remember one of the many journalism awards you won at the Sanlam Journalism Awards, which is the biggest award for financial journalists. You gave a speech about how when you first applied for a job with Alec Hogg, he said, "Well, what do you know about money?" And you said, "Well, I know absolutely nothing."
It's true story.
And he said, "Yeah, but surely you know something." And you said, "No, I really don't." I think, Bruce, I knew a tenth of what you probably did at that stage. I knew absolutely nothing about money when I started as a business journalist. And I think
my first job in financial journalism, I went in and they said, "Any questions from you?" And I went, "Well, this all share index thing you guys talk about every day, what is it exactly?" And they looked at me with a degree of circumspection and sort of laughed uncomfortably. And I went off and I got the job. And about 3 weeks into my tenure, which was about to be cut very, very short, they said, "You really don't know anything." And I said, "Well, that's what I told you." I said, "Yes, but we've never met anybody quite as ignorant as you." And I said, "Well, I didn't lie, did I?" And so we had a very frank discussion. That discussion ended with me saying, "Well, give me another 3 weeks or another month or whatever it was. And if I don't prove myself during that time, then I will go quietly." I got lucky on a couple of stories, broke a few stories. Thank goodness. Because it could have all been very, very, you know, could all have been very, very different.
Yeah, and so many of us know nothing about, you know, a lot of people study in the, you know, do a BCom and study investments at university, and they obviously go into that career. A lot of other people, like perhaps you and me, come into it by accident through a circuitous route, and you kind of learn on the job. But it's, you know, if you compare the level of financial knowledge you have now to 20 years ago, it's streets apart.
It's a failing of our system, and it's a failing of education, and it's a failing of, I don't know, just being, we are being dragged up the wrong way. We've got to be teaching, and this is why I do this feature, because I'm curious as to what happens in households and how people are brought up to understand money. I find it interesting that you go off and you go and do law at university and you end up with a student debt, which hamstrings you. And I mean, generations of young people are hamstrung by student debt, and they take some ages to get out. And it's such a hindrance to financial progress and to your ability to build up assets.
That's true, Bruce. But I also think it's what you just mentioned. You're not taught about this at schools. I certainly wasn't. And I think that I had no sense of how to handle money. And my parents obviously didn't have that either. So I was obtuse about what I should be doing and how I should be managing to pay off the things. You get a loan and you think that the loan is the end game, not repaying it. So I had no sense of how it should work, and I think that is what did set me back. But it's a learning curve. You learn these things, and you don't make those mistakes again.
Well, you hope you don't. You most certainly don't. I mean, your kids are small, but I mean, do you talk to them about money? Do you give them pocket money? Do you make them do chores for pocket money? Are you tight-fisted and mean? How are you with your own kids when it comes to money?
Yes, yeah, super mean. I'm the youngest one is 5, so he's basically learning now, and he tries to bribe me with game coins he finds to do certain things, but that hasn't worked yet. So I was amazed. For example, nobody teaches you about the currency rates for tooth fairies, for example, and I found that was a steep learning curve that nobody really speaks about. You know, is it 5 rand? Is it 10 rand? Is it 20 rand? So I've tried to get my kids more interested in how money works and what it's made up of. Because I do think that our schools are a big problem. They don't teach the kind of investment stuff that you hear about in very successful people. You know, guys like Warren Buffett who were you know, doing looking at stocks on the playground. I feel like that's the kind of thing where people can learn about money and what it can do for you when you're young. And I just think it'd be nice to have more people like that who have an awareness of how that works.
Talking to Rob Rose this evening, editor of the Financial Mail. We've got a remarkably similar financial background. In other words, not very successful at all. So those who can do and those who can't write about it or talk about it, more with Rob Rose, the editor of the Financial Mail, the author of Stein Heist, one of the finest books written on the crisis of white-collar crime in South Africa. He is the editor of the magazine. He's also an author. More with him in a moment.
The Money Show.
Other people's money.
Rob Rose, the editor of the Financial Mail, is our guest this evening. Rob, so do you invest today? I mean, beyond the company pension fund, are you somebody who actively puts money away for a rainy day or for global warming or whatever the trendy thing is to put money away for?
Yeah, I like to save. I mean, I have like tax-free investment accounts and things like that, and you know, try to keep money aside for what I'm sure will be the end of days. So yeah, you know, you try to, but I'm inspired by your stories of that you tell. For example, that woman, was it Shelley who kept saving and then built
Julia.
This massive.
Julia.
No, yes,
I mean, Julia, our investment guru, we're due to catch up with her. We always catch up with her in Savings Month, because so many of the Savings Month stories that are told are so you're going to live on cat food and suffer and die because you haven't saved enough, and it scares the living daylights out of people. And I prefer to inspire people into active growth and opportunity. And I mean, Julia just did very simple things consistently over a period of years, and I can't wait to see what her cash pile is. She saved about 2.1 million rand in total, and she stopped doing it a couple of years ago because she was taking money offshore and she had bought a house and a car and was having kids and stuff. But what she'd done as a young person had set her up for long-term growth, courtesy of the power of compounding. It's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the kind of thing that people should aspire to. And it's not as if you have to be born in this position. You can start late, make a few small tweaks, put aside a small amount every month. I mean, that's why I think that innovations like easy equities, where you can invest in part of shares, for example, is a really good thing to kind of get people into the mode. And I think you realize you do learn over time. And I think when you start getting, you see that small little dividend come through, it's tiny now, but the more you can build it, the more you become slightly more financially independent. I was struck during COVID, Bruce, at how many people had, how many small businesses had less than 3 months cash.
Yeah.
I mean, they basically were just, you know, anything goes wrong and they're done. And that, I think, is how a lot of people in this country live, hand to mouth. And it's a very scary phenomenon, especially when we live in such a volatile society.
I mean, it's not only the businesses, but I mean families living from paycheck to paycheck with absolutely no reserve whatsoever. And you say to people, well, you should be saving money. They say, well, I can't save, you know, got to go to Mauritius or whatever the case might be, a different, you know, different scale of issues. Some people genuinely don't have any money because they are supporting many, many family members. But there are people who live way beyond their means in the corporate sector, people with high-powered jobs earning a million rand a year who just have nothing, who don't have anything saved up. And it is terrifying.
Yeah, absolutely. And Bruce, you know quite well, Just One Lap, Simon Brown and Christo van Heerden.
Yeah.
And I think they talked a lot about how they initially were exactly those kind of people, you know, the holidays in Mauritius, or certainly Christia. And then after a while, it was a case of how she realized how things work and became serious about getting her financial life in order. And now she's saved and she's far more aware of what things cost or what fees are. You've spoken, for example, of the fees that people charge on investment accounts and just looking at those kind of things, which isn't something you do until you become serious about seeing where your money goes. And I think that's how you make the small changes that ultimately can lead you to a much better place, hopefully.
Do you spend money on fun stuff? Let's pretend that there's no COVID and there are holidays. You said you, as a kid, went on two holidays. Do you sort of make amends to your own children for that? Would you like to make amends to your own children so that they don't have to sort of have the restriction that you grew up under? Do you want to make it better for them, or must they suffer the way you did?
I would feel better if they suffered, but I'm probably not that mean. But obviously, you obviously want your children to suffer more to hear how tough you've had.
Exactly. Why else have them if you can't make them feel what it was like when you were a kid? Yeah.
No, I've had it much tougher than you ever had. So I do. You know, we do go away once or twice a year, or once a year often. I have relatives down in Port Elizabeth, so we often go there. PE is surprisingly nice sometimes, you know, Bruce.
It's a lovely, Gqeberha, the greater Gqeberha area is glorious. It's a bit breezy after 9 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock at night. But other than that, it's a wonderful place. It blows me away every time I go.
And the thing I have to admit to is I've become quite a hoarder of loyalty miles. E-bucks, I've become such a hoarder that for the last couple of years I've spent nothing on it. I've tried to game the system so I get as many rewards as possible so that hopefully one day I can pay for this immense holiday to the moon or back on SpaceX. That's my ultimate plan. But even as well on Discovery Bank, I've now got a Discovery Bank card, and I'm trying, I think, loyalty programs where you get paid to use products you would anyway. For example, if you went to Woolworths, might as well get paid 30% back for that, you know? Why not?
Hey, your kids are loud. I wonder where they get that from. It's okay, Rob. We don't mind your kids participating. My official French's children nearly killed each other live on the radio once. She put the phone down on us and went to go and separate them. So it happens. Honestly, it does in the work from home environment. So you hoard loyalty points in the hope that one day they'll be worth something and you'll figure out how the schemes actually do work. From a money perspective, do you have any bad habits? I mean, other than bad personal habits as a journalist, but I mean, do you sort of have a spending habit? Do you go for a gamble once a week? Do you have a poker club? Do you do that kind of thing or not?
Yeah, I love poker, but I'm terrible at it, as you'd expect. But
Yeah, totally.
I'm happy to give you money. I'll pay you in e-bucks if that's okay. But
that's really fine. I'll take it in anything. Just send me the money directly and you'll save the trouble of playing the game. I haven't learned it yet.
But otherwise, I wouldn't really say so much. I mean, I resist the urge to. I don't like buying. For example, I wouldn't buy a new car just in principle. I'm fairly careful about it, I think. But, you know, I suppose there are those things that, you know, I tend to buy coffee, for example, once a day. I certainly was when we were going to the office. And I think that's a habit that adds up. And that's the kind of thing that if you're Christie van Heerden, you'll cut out. That's the kind of thing that I suppose I need to look at.
But it's those small luxuries each and every single day that become the habits that you feel like you can't live without, because if you miss it on day three of the week, you have a lousy day and you blame it on the fact that you skipped your coffee, where in fact it's costing you $150 a week, and that adds to $600 a month, that adds to $30,000 a year, and you go, hold on a second, I've done what? I put that through my kidneys. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Unlike other journalists, I drink a bit of alcohol occasionally. So whiskey, no. And whiskey and sure. Wine.
What's the most small and yana skeleton time? What's the most you've ever spent on a bottle of whiskey?
It probably would be probably about 800 rand. It's not particularly wild. I need to become more wild on the whiskey.
I'm not too sure that you need to become wild. You just go to Whiskey Live when it starts up again and you get to sample whiskey at other people's expense. Rob Rose, lovely catching up. Nice to chat to you. We do need to go now. The editor of the Financial Mail, the author of a fabulous book called Stein Heist, it's still on the shelves. If you're perplexed by Marcus Huerster and don't understand how he got away with what he got away with for an awfully long time, Rob's book On It is the best on the subject. Rob Rose, the editor of the Financial Mail, thank you so much for joining us this evening on The Money Show.